Hi and welcome to the ESG podcast from British International Investment. British International Investment is the UK's development finance institution and impact investor. And in this podcast series, we explore how investors and businesses can help develop their understanding of environmental, social and governance issues. So in this episode, I'm handing you over to Genevieve Joy from our ESG Impact team, who's been speaking to Andrea Cullinan from the IFC about the important and growing issue of gender-based violence and harassment, or GBVH as it's sometimes known. Genevieve and Andrea discuss how it's defined, why it's become more prominent since the pandemic, and why it is essential for businesses and investors to address.
Hi, I'm Genevieve Joy, and I'm on the Environmental, Social, and Governance Impact team at BII, where I support companies and funds to integrate environmental and social management into their operations and investments. I am also the domain lead on safeguarding. So for BII, safeguarding is about protecting people from harm. We see this as part of our responsibility as an investor, and more largely part of the private sector's responsibility to its workforce and the communities where they operate. So today, we're going to focus on one aspect of safeguarding, which is gender-based violence and harassment, or GBVH. GBVH is an umbrella term for sexual exploitation, abuse, and harassment, but can also be non-sexual forms of violence and harassment. I think it's important to say that GBVH affects men and women, boys and girls, but it disproportionately does impact women and girls. Our guest today, Andrea Cullinan, is an expert on the topic, and we are so grateful to have the chance to speak with her about GBVH and the private sector.
Hi, Genevieve, and it's great to be here, and thank you to BII for this opportunity. Yes, so I'm Andrea Cullinan, and I'm the lead for the area of gender-based violence and harassment at IFC in the Environmental, Social, and Governance Department. So with that, IFC, along with our colleagues in other DFIs like BII have been working hard on this agenda over several years now and trying to support the private sector in its efforts to address the important issue of gender-based violence and harassment.
So can you tell us a bit more about how you came to specialize in the area of GBVH? It's not really something I think that you grew up planning on specializing in.
Absolutely not. As a child, who even thinks of it, right? So it's actually, you know, I'll cut a very long story short, but I've had a very circuitous route to this this speciality. But I have spent my years of my career working on gender equality more broadly. And in fact, my broader speciality is in this thematic area that we call women, peace and security, which is about women's rights. It's about women's participation, and in that is a subsection called gender-based violence. I've spent the last 15 years, before joining the private sector, I was in the public sector domain with the United Nations, actually, and I spent a lot of years mostly in Africa, but mostly in fragile states, so, you know, 11 countries. And my work involved working with women, women's groups, women's civil society organisation, with governments, with all the key stakeholders that we now work closely with through ESG domain. And I was working with them on their rights, often in fragile settings where their rights had been completely either erased or certainly weren't being upheld. So I came to focus more and more on this particular topic. And somewhere down the track, that has led me now to working with the private sector. I really see that the private sector actually is such a great opportunity for working on gender-based violence and harassment. I think we need to really leverage the power of the private sector and what they can bring. So, you know, clearly in terms of women's economic opportunities, it's clear that they have to be part of the private sector, and private sector have to engage, you know, much more robustly and meaningfully. But again, in terms of addressing some of these barriers like gender-based violence to women's participation in the workforce, which then by default also is part of leading towards gender equality and so forth. This is actually why I think, you know, working in the private sector is an exciting space. It's a new frontier, and it's one of those areas that we need to bring all the stakeholders together in a holistic manner to address something that is such a pervasive and systemic issue as gender-based violence and harassment.
Absolutely. And it's 2022. We can't really talk about most issues these days without referring to the pandemic. And so I just wanted to ask you, we've seen GBVH and incidents and reports rise since the pandemic. In some cases, I've heard an 18% global increase was measured. I know IFC actually published guidance on COVID-19 and gender-based violence and harassment, outlining some of the heightened risks, the ways that these can be addressed. Why the rise from your perspective?
It's a really important question, and I want to preface this answer by saying that GBVH has definitely risen during the pandemic, and we've now got significant evidence base that tells us that. But GBVH was always a problem, and we say that it was actually the silent pandemic, or the second pandemic, if you like. It's just pre-existing COVID, it was a hidden problem that people weren't paying enough attention to. So then the pandemic comes along, and yes, we've seen a significant rise in incidents of gender-based violence, but we haven't seen a significant rise in we haven't seen significant response in proportion to the rise in gender-based violence. So there's that gap is one of the issues. So what we know is that gender-based violence and harassment, and in particular domestic violence actually, increase in all emergencies. So the pandemic COVID-19 has been no different. It increases in every public emergency. Why is that so? It's because services, response services that are usually there as a bit of a safety net, break down. Other types of social safety nets tend to break down during emergencies and pandemics. So, for example, access to family support, access to health services, access to, you know, other means of support that gender-based violence survivors usually would access, break down. So we also, of course, know that there's been the lockdowns, the stay-at-home orders and whatever, which by definition means that a survivor is actually locked in with a perpetrator without also that access to maybe the usual safety nets that she might have in other situations. So all of these combination of factors. So the evidence that shows us how much gender-based violence has increased is also based on the fact that services weren't available. So where the services and response facilities, the safety nets were absent, you also saw an increased rate of incidents of gender-based mm-hmm. violence. So that is really important. And what we know in the first 6 months alone, you know, we think that there was at least an additional 31 million incidents of GBV just in those first 6 months. Again, because breakdown of services largely.
And I actually wanted to pick up on that because you mentioned that working from home or lockdowns could end up with somebody being locked in with their perpetrator, which is very much intimate partner or domestic violence. But of course, there were also cases where the perpetrator is in the workplace, right? And so I suppose mm-hmm. for some, it was maybe a welcome break if they were able to work from home, get some space, although that doesn't prevent, let's say, digital harassment. Or we often hear about people getting WhatsApp messages that are messages that they find to be harassment, basically, you know, on their personal phone, for example. The other thing I was thinking about, though, of course, is so many people weren't able to work from home even during quarantine. And what that might have meant was either their job was at risk because perhaps, you know, there was a reduction in demand and they weren't able to fulfill it, or you know, maybe there was just a higher level of job loss and insecurity, which I know was particularly prevalent among women compared to men during the pandemic. And if you're in a position, I imagine, where you're working and you are more reliant than ever on the company for your job, you're less likely to speak up, I imagine.
I think these are really important points, Genevieve. And I'd like to pick up on the digital harassment. And there's been interesting research on this actually during the pandemic, the increase in harassment through social media, through other forms of communication and whatever, including, of course, workplace harassment, but via cyberbullying. Mm-hmm. So this has been, you know, this is an emerging trend that we're finding in gender-based violence and harassment. And I think this is something that the International Labour Organization, ILO, and its Convention 190, which is the Convention on Violence in the World of Work, it defined the world of work to include the cyberspace.
Right. Now that we've established, okay, the private sector is paying more attention, they're being asked to by international organizations, they're realizing that it's a core responsibility. What does GBVH then really mean for companies and investors?
In terms of what it looks like, GBVH actually, this is how it plays out in companies. When we look at sexual harassment, we look at, in giving some practical examples, we look at things like women even on their way to work. And I'm saying women because we do know that disproportionately this does affect women, but I do recognize that it affects gender diverse people, it also affects men, but it really disproportionately affects women. Women on the way to work, traveling on the bus, traveling on a company bus maybe because it's company supplied transport to site or something like that. You know, are they safe? Do they feel okay to travel alone? Company supplied accommodation, perhaps because it's in a remote site, and then is this accommodation safe, segregated, protected, well-lit? There's lots of practicalities around the physical design that also can impact or the risk of gender-based violence and harassment. Does the company have good policies and procedures to actually prevent this happening? So do workers actually know what to expect, what conduct they should and behaviours they should actually manifest? What is it that the company is doing to train people or to help them address those issues? So there's some very practical things. So when there's sexual harassment in the workplace, how is it actually able to be reported? Are people feeling safe enough to speak up? And if they do, is there a proper system in place to, you know, manage those complaints and have some redress? So in a very practical way, there's many aspects that a company can look at in terms of how to either prevent or respond to gender-based violence. In terms of, you know, the fact that GBV can pose a range of risks, costly litigation, loss of profits, damaged reputation, these are all part of the business case. But overall, I think, you know, we recognize that this is really, gender-based violence and harassment is really a systemic issue. So it means that a company cannot afford to only address it in one place or in one aspect. It's got to be a holistic approach.
That's great. And I think it's really interesting to break down the idea of even what a systemic issue means. You know, it's a term that we use a lot. And so it can be, you can kind of lose a sense of its meaning. But actually, as you say, it requires a systemic approach. And so that's bringing in your partners. It's making sure that you are thinking about the extent of your responsibility, who are your workers, who are your contractors, who are the NGOs, civil society, government organizations who can support you in this. Important to highlight that as it becomes more of a recognized private sector responsibility, it's not only the role of the private sector, it's the role of the whole system, as you say.
And the private sector, you know, recognizing that it needs to cherish and harness those relationships with those stakeholders. So, you know, really having a solid stakeholder engagement plan, I think is critical to managing and de-risking GBVH in the company context. So, as you said, you know, the company thinking thinking broadly, like civil society actors, community engagement, supply chain contractors, all of these, you know, have to have a part to play in addressing this issue.
Absolutely. So we've alluded to the business case a little bit. You've shared some statistics. I think it would be good to flesh it out just a little bit more around what is the business case for anybody in the private sector who maybe isn't convinced yet or isn't really aware of how it can impact their bottom line through, you know, commercial impacts, employee impacts, or reputational risks.
Sure. I think the business case is very strong for addressing gender-based violence and harassment. And I would encourage people to look at some of the data on this because it's really quite shocking. But in sexual and physical harassment of workers really translates into direct costs for companies. And this includes costs around individual productivity, costs of team performance, turnover, litigation, insurance, reputation, brand perception. All these are direct costs as a result of sexual and physical harassment. In fact, you know, one meta-analysis of all 41 studies on workplace sexual-based harassment found that companies lose an estimated 22,500 in productivity per harassed individual. Now, if you multiply that, of course, over the number of harassed individuals, and that's just, you know, a very, very modest figure. We also know that the impacts of gender-based violence not only has impact on the individual in terms of their own health and well-being. For example, we know that it increases rates of depression. It can actually lead to suicide. Well, depression itself then long-term can lead to suicide. So actually death is a consequence of gender-based violence and harassment in some cases, and that's apart from people actually being murdered through gender-based violence, losing their lives. So that's a very serious, you know, on the really grave end of the negative impacts on health and well-being on individuals and their families. But all of that, of course, has the knock-on effect in businesses. So addressing such risks, though, the good news is addressing it actually has many business benefits. So we know big business case, lots of risks, lots of costs, but also a lot of benefits for addressing those risks. So instead, you then can get improved productivity, improved performance, reduced accident potential, improved access to skills, talent, improved stakeholder relations, all of these. So there's the business case also is that there's a lot of opportunities for a business if they address and prevent and manage gender-based violence and harassment.
It's amazing because I think if you said to anybody, whether, you know, the most commercial-minded person or an ESG professional, if you said to them that there was a risk factor in their business that was impacting employee retention, it was impacting health and safety, it was impacting reputation, you know, of course it would be the number one priority to fix. And here we are having a conversation about whether there's a business case for it. It's really shocking, isn't it? As we wrap up, what are three things that investors and companies need to get right when addressing GBVH? And I ask this because I think in my experience, even within my team of ESG experts, there are a lot of things that you're thinking about. There are a lot of risks you have to manage. And if it's not an area of expertise for you, it can be overwhelming. So for somebody listening to this podcast, what are the three things that they need to get right or take away from this?
It's a really good question, and I have the top three for you. I also just want to say that ESG practices really are the incredible leverage to incentivize the market to prevent, mitigate, and respond effectively to reduce gender-based violence risks and impact, and really to strengthen the development outcomes that we're all looking for. So what are these top three takeaways? I would say number one would be, you know, prevention of gender-based violence. So we need to start from prevention. So what does that actually look like? Very quickly, I'd say it's really about strengthening leadership, corporate culture, so that the risks actually are understood, that there's a root cause analysis consistently being done around what's happening in the workplace that may contribute to gender-based violence or harassment, or allow it to fester. Second would be response. So responding effectively and meaningfully to reports of gender-based violence in your company or in your workplace. So it's really important that responses to any reports of gender-based violence and harassment are really guided firstly by what we say is a survivor-centered approach. What that means is, you know, treat the person who's making the report or has experienced the gender-based violence and harassment with dignity. Treat them with respect in a non-judgmental way. So having a safe and sound and ethical response process and mechanisms to reporting of GBVH is the second top takeaway here. The third would be monitoring. You know, gender-based violence and harassment is not stagnant. The risks of gender-based violence and harassment actually ebb and flow. They can emerge. So new risks can emerge. Maybe the company has expands, maybe takes on new business, maybe goes into new operations in different locations. So new risk can always emerge. But existing risk also can change over the course of a whole investment, over the project or operation. So the message here is monitoring and regular risk assessment of gender-based violence and harassment risk is always important. So never let that, you know, never let your radar down. So those are the three messages, Genevieve.
That's great. Thank you. Yes, I was thinking about this too, and you just hit all of the things I was thinking, especially survivor-centered approach. This is really a priority for us at BII. It needs to be integral. I think that there's a risk in a lot of situations of suddenly somebody's been through something and now they're the victim or the survivor and they are treated differently. And actually we need to empower and prioritize their needs and wishes. Grievance mechanisms, 100%, yes. And that's a core requirement for us as well. Have a grievance mechanism in place that can handle this kind of incident report that is confidential, that can be anonymous in some cases, and responds adequately, absolutely. And leadership from the top, definitely. I think most ESG issues tend to be managed operationally at sort of mid and senior management level, but we've found that buy-in needs to be from the very top, and having, you know, subcommittees that are reporting on these issues up to the board is really helpful, and no different for GBVH. If you have a really senior champion who's saying, messaging to the whole company and community that this is a priority and that we're willing to and happy to hear how we can improve, and it's a safe place to file complaints and you'll be heard and responded to quickly, I think that's really important. It makes a big difference. So yes, completely aligned in what you've said and the way you framed it as well around prevention, response, and monitoring.
So a big thank you to Genevieve and Andrea for that very informative discussion. And if you want to explore this topic further, there are a range of resources available in the episode notes, or you can go to our ESG toolkit, which is at toolkit.bii.co.uk. That's all we have time for in this episode. Thank you very much for listening. We'll see you again soon.